This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark, brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Everett Peck. He's an animator best known for Duckman. Everett, great having you on.
Thanks for having me.
And I'm also joined here with Cartrell Payne.
Yeah, well, thank you. I've been a big fan of his work for years.
Well, thank you.
I know you worked as an illustrator prior to getting into animation. How long have you been an artist, and including your work as an illustrator, what mediums have you worked in?
Well, I started as an illustrator, and I worked as an illustrator for about 20 years, doing mostly magazine work, editorial work, advertising, all kinds of different things, and I worked for Playboy, Rolling Stone, and all the major magazines. And that's kind of how I got into animation. When I got out of college, there really wasn't much going on in animation at that time, so illustration was a lot more interesting to me. But I work primarily in pen and ink, and also in gouache painting, some digital stuff now. And I still do some illustration once in a while, but that was sort of my main thing until actually I started doing Duckman in the early 90s.
What were some of your artistic influences?
Oh, I think the underground comics of the 60s, like Robert Crumb and those kind of guys, and also 19th century pen and ink illustrators like John Tenniel, who did the original Alice in Wonderland, and Heinrich Clay. Go ahead.
Oh, really? I thought that your inspiration was 1930s and 40s cartoons like Looney Tunes and the Fleischer Brothers.
Oh, that too. That was also a big influence on me. But like I say, there wasn't much going on in animation as a profession at that time. But that was always something I followed all the time. And I really kind of delved into the history of early cartoons and all of that when I was in high school and in college. And you're right. I mean, the Fleischer Brothers and all that early stuff was an influence on me as well.
How long have you been an animator, and what was your first project?
Well, I did some design work for some projects for Klasky Csupo when they were doing Sesame Street stuff. And I did some designs for that. It was actually at that time, as in the early 90s, when Gabor Csupo, who was one of the principals at Klasky Csupo, asked me if I'd, they were still a pretty small studio then. They had just started doing The Simpsons, actually. And they did that for two seasons. But he asked me if I had any ideas for animated shows. And I just started working on the Duckman comic, and I said, yeah, I got this character, and I showed him some of the work I was doing for the comic, and he liked it, so we decided to go in the partnership together to develop it as an animated idea. So that was the early 90s.
So you were at Klasky Csupo from the very beginning. Tell us about the early days.
Well, I wasn't from the very beginning, but I came in shortly after they got going, and at the time they were just kind of getting up and running. They had, like I mentioned, they were doing shorts for Sesame Street and a few ads here and there. But they just picked up the Simpsons that was just starting. I think that was, what, 89? So 89, 90, they did those two seasons of the Simpsons. And, of course, that was before it totally took off. But they established really the basic look of the Simpsons, the color and all that stuff. That's all those guys. That's all Klasky Csupo. But so I started working kind of freelance around that time for him. And then I was never totally part of the studio. I was always sort of an independent contractor. But when we started Duckman, I was there all the time, but sort of as an independent person. He had a whole group of really great artists that were working in the studio full time at the time.
Was Duckman originally intended towards more of an adult audience?
Yeah, I never intended it for kids. And that's one reason I really liked talking to Gabor about it, because he felt the same way. He wanted to just do something that you know, we liked, and not really worry about trying to make it for kids. So it was never really a kid's show. I mean, we always intended it as an adult show. So we were in agreement on that.
Well, yeah, it seems to me that your show, along with Moral Oral, kind of were like the predecessor to BoJack Horseman, you know, with like the humor, with like dark, cynical, you know, edge to it, and, you know, along with some more somber moments.
Yeah, well, that was one thing I tried to work on in the comic, even. I wanted Duckman to be this over the top in your face sort of character, but also to have you know, sort of another side to him that was a little more sympathetic. And you know, he'd be very boisterous and have these big ideas, and they all blow up in his face, and so, but then you kind of felt sorry for him. So he I always wanted him to kind of have this multi-dimensional thing, which is more of an adult thing anyway, right? I mean, that being an adult, that emotional range is a lot different than you know, most kids' shows have. But yeah, I've always wanted to try to make him like have a full range of emotion and kind of adult stories. And, you know, there's sexual innuendo and all of that stuff. As far as I know, there really wasn't too much. I think we were the first to kind of do that. It's interesting you mentioned BoJack Horseman, and that's kind of similar in that there's sort of a, that was another thing I wanted to do, is try to make Duckman an example of sort of an homage to cartoon logic, right? So some of the characters were animals, and some were humans, and some were hybrids, and I felt in an animated cartoon world, why not do that? I mean, you don't have to make everything consistent like in real life. So but I noticed that in BoJack Horseman too, this kind of this mix and match thing. But, you know, it's interesting you mentioned BoJack Horseman, because when I after Duckman, I was had an overall deal with Klasky Csupo, and I was developing a show called Stinky Pierre, and at the same time they were also internally on their own developing a show called You Animal. And you can find clips of that on YouTube. But You Animal, I mean, he was a horse character who was in showbiz and you know, really had a lot of adult situations and everything. And when I first saw BoJack Horseman, I was kind of surprised, because I wondered what connection it had, if any, with You Animal, which was their Klasky Csupo thing. So I don't know if there's a relationship there or not between those two ideas. But if you watch You Animal on YouTube, you'll immediately see the similarity of BoJack Horseman.
Did you get the idea to cast Jason Alexander for Duckman because you were a Seinfeld fan?
No, you know, it's kind of funny. Seinfeld had just sort of started. I mean, it's like it had been in like two seasons, and it really hadn't become the big hit it eventually would. So it was sort of under the radar kind of show at that point. So we listened to a lot of people, literally about 70 people for Duckman, and I remember I narrowed it down to about five people, and a good friend of mine, Marv Newman, who directed the first episode, and he's done a lot of great stuff on his own. But he was sitting in the office with me, and I was playing back these five voices, and he heard Jason, and he said, "Hey, that's your guy." I said, "Yeah, I think you're right," you know, because I'd been so, I'd listened to so many voices, I was just kind of burned out with the whole thing. But when he said that, I kind of thought, well, yeah, that makes sense. He's great. But Jason, you know, had the great voice, but also great comic timing and all that stuff that was important for the character. Yeah, he was hard to cast, actually. Kornfed was really easy. Greg Berger, when he came in and read for us, he was just, oh, that's him right there. Because I wanted this kind of Jack Webb, you know, kind of low-key guy to offset, a very logical guy to offset Duckman's manic personality.
When you created that character, going back to the original comic, did you have any, like, persona in particular that you were thinking of?
Yeah, actually, he's kind of based on a good friend of mine. And particularly the working relationship with Kornfed. My friend had a company and an assistant, and the assistant did all the work, and my friend was sort of this, like, kind of big mouth guy, know-it-all guy. And so that kind of was the impetus for the Duckman and Kornfed relationship. And actually, the first drawing I ever did of Duckman, when I was kind of playing around with the idea, also included Kornfed. So it's kind of like they kind of fit together right from the start. And then I built up the family and everything from there. I wanted him to be this guy that was just like Sisyphus, you know, he was rolling the rock up the hill, and he'd get almost to the top, and then the rock would roll over him and start all over. So he's this guy that, you know, was always struggling and never could quite get anything right, but always was very optimistic and had these big ideas.
The show, the humor of the show was very smart.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, when we started to develop the show, we had, we'd contacted a few writers, but Jeff Reno and Ron Osborne were the ones that really clicked, and I really liked them, and we got along really well, and they immediately picked up on the whole thing and put together a terrific group of writers to work with us. And I always felt that was something we all wanted, was to make it sort of smart, and again, not to try to dumb it down too much or make it like a kids level kind of thing, but make it more just stuff we liked and we were interested in.
With the art style and aesthetic for Duckman, there's a sort of like surreal influence. Was the style based on some of your work as an illustrator?
Yeah, it's pretty much my style. And if you look at some of my illustration stuff, like for Rolling Stone or whatever, you know, I that's pretty much an extension into the Duckman world. But it was just, yeah, sort of my drawing style. In fact, I had to kind of clean it up a little bit because my drawing style is much sloppier, kind of looser than Duckman. And so when we started to develop, refine it for animation, where a bunch of people have to draw the same character, I had to kind of clean him up a little bit. So he was originally kind of a taller, scratchier kind of looking character. So for animation, I cleaned up the line more, but I also changed his proportions up a little bit. So I brought him down a little more compressed, a little shorter character, and cleaned up the line so that, you know, a lot of people could draw the same thing. So that's the biggest difference, is I just kind of took my scratchy, loose line and made it more, easier to follow.
Do you have style changes in your different cartoons? So from Duckman to Squirrel Boy, you go for more of a 40s to 50s feel?
Yeah, exactly. On Squirrel Boy, I wanted to make him like a modern 50s cartoon. So I really borrowed a lot of the aesthetics from Warner Brothers and some of those great Maurice Noble backgrounds. Some UPA, and Cartoon Modern feel. and sort of wanted to pull that into the Squirrel Boy thing. Also, when we did Squirrel Boy, that was in the mid, I mean, the early 2000s. We had a lot more technology at my disposal, oddly enough, than Duckman. Duckman was 10 years earlier, and it was done on cell, actually, like old, Max Flasher stuff is all done on cell. So there were limitations to what I could do in terms of textures and shadows and all that kind of thing. Whereas with Squirrel Boy, the digital thing had evolved to a point where you could do textures and more complex shadows and that kind of thing. So that's what we did. And with Squirrel Boy, all the backgrounds were painted by hand. We do the actual paintings. And then on Squirrel Boy, they were all digital. So it was a big difference. We had a lot more control over Squirrel Boy.
What I meant to say was, were you influenced by British humor for Duckman, since it was incredibly dark?
I liked Monty Python and all that stuff. And I used, whenever I could see their TV series, I'd watch it. Or when they did some of their, their movies, I'd go see them two or three times. I really liked the that kind of dark British humor. Yeah. So I guess some of that wore off on me in Duckman, although it wasn't an intentional thing, but I'm just sure through osmosis it found its way in there. My cartoons tend to be pretty dark too anyway, so in fact, if anything, I had to kind of lighten up Duckman a little bit to make him not quite too dark, because I wanted him to be a character that was obnoxious and everything, but had enough kind of sweetness to him that you could kind of like him, you could kind of get with him, so he wasn't totally awful.
Family Guy or like American Dad, where Roger or Peter are just the most evil characters and there's no niceness to them at all.
They play often, and I think Homer Simpson's a little bit like that too, and I think it's a convention now in animated characters that they play the dad as kind of an idiot, he's stupid. But with Duckman, I wanted him to have a little deeper kind of emotional pinning. So yeah, he definitely did stupid things and stuff, but he also had some redeeming qualities too. And so that was one thing that we all kind of tried to get a hold of in the series, instead of making him, just stereotypical idiot all the time.
So you had a sense, as far as it's not just like a caricature, as a lot of cartoon characters are, it's different than the general, it is animation, but it's different than the general cartoon genre in that sense.
Right. And that's one thing I always wanted to try to stress, is I wanted it to be, have somewhat of an artistic bend to it. So it played off of traditional animation conventions and that whole thing. But also, combining that, those kind of classic cartoon characters that are animal characters and all of that, combining that with, kind of real writing, kind of true, emotionally based writing. So I wanted to combine those two worlds together. And I think in the best episodes, we were really successful at that. I don't think they were all successful, but I think in the best ones, we were able to kind of combine those two elements.
Were you the primary writer?
No, that was Reno Osborne. We're running the writing team. We had about 10 writers at one point. And so there's a lot of different people writing for it. But I wrote the comic and sort of set the tone and developed a lot of the early characters like King Chicken and some of those characters. But then, as you go forward on a series, when you're doing, 13 episodes a season, and we did about 70 shows, you can't do it all yourself. It's got to be a team effort.
Yeah, that reminds me of a joke told by a reviewer who didn't like Squirrel Boy. He said, he did like a criticism of your writing. He said, He said, "Ah, misdirection. Can you tell that the person who wrote this, who wrote Squirrel Boy, also wrote Duckman?" The person criticized your writing. He said, "You know that you use misdirection a lot."
Well, you know, I mean, people can say lots of things. What I tried to do with Squirrel Boy was to make it, you know, first of all, it was intended to be a kid's show, but it was kind of flipped with Duckman. Duckman was an adult show, but it had some elements that kids would like, whereas Squirrel Boy was a kid's show, but tried to have some elements that adults could get a hold of, too, so they could sit down and watch it with their kids. And, you know, so I tried to have, you know, complete story arcs and B stories, sometimes even C stories in the plot, which was unusual for Cartoon Network at that time. So there was a lot of, you know, I got a lot of pushback on Squirrel because, first of all, it came in at a weird period in Cartoon Network's history because a lot of the earlier favorite shows like Ed and Eddie and all that, and it's a great show. I love that. Danny Animucci is a friend of mine, and they were great shows, but they just kind of ended. I mean, they didn't stop them because Squirrel Boy was coming. It was just they'd kind of run their order out, and it just so happened that Squirrel Boy was following up. So I think people thought that, oh, well, they canceled those shows for this new group of shows. Among them was Squirrel Boy, and there was a lot of kind of animosity there, but that wasn't the case at all. I like what we did with Squirrel Boy. I thought it was an interesting show, and again, trying to do something more than just the stereotypical kind of characters in a show.
Well, yeah, you also did you didn't do the show. You designed the characters for the Jumanji, the animated series.
Yes, that's right. I did a lot of stuff. I had an overall deal at Sony for a while, so I worked on a lot of their projects. Like Jumanji was particularly fun. I really enjoyed that. Well, that was for UPN. I designed like concepts for monsters and stuff on Men in Black and Ghostbusters, and there was another show called Dragon Tales. It was a kids show that I helped art direct, and so I did a lot of art direction, character design for a lot of those shows too that weren't necessarily my creations.
Do you have any ongoing or upcoming projects?
Yeah, I've actually got a couple of things going. Actually, with Reno Osborne, we're working on a couple of things. A thing called Dick Profane, which was their idea. And then another one called Buddy, which is my idea that they've been working with me on. So we're putting those together and developing those a bit. And I've also worked on a couple of other concepts with friends of mine, but it's kind of low-key stuff right now. I'm kind of taking it easy. I don't necessarily want to get into the big craziness that is, you know, doing a show, unless it's just right.
Yeah, some people have compared your show to be a little like The Critic, which I think is good because I think both of your shows were underrated.
Yeah, I mean, I did some design work on The Critic too, but I mean, there were lots of people working on that show. But yeah, I liked The Critic. I thought it was pretty smart. It's well written, but for some reason, I think they only did like one episode, season, maybe two, I'm not sure. But yeah, I did some initial designs and stuff for that too. But yeah, I don't know why that one didn't click. It was a weird time because there were a lot of shows. The Simpsons had taken off, and so all the networks are saying, "Oh man, we got to get an animated show. You know, it's hot now." So there were lots of shows. Hanna-Barbera did a couple of shows. One was called Fish Police, and you know, it was all kinds of shows. And The Critic was one of them. Duckman was one of them. You know, so there's all these different shows coming up, but most of them didn't last very long. Duckman lasted longer than a lot of them. We did four seasons, but a lot of them would only go like a season, half season. You know, so there were lots of shows coming out, but most of them didn't last very long. The network would get, you know, scared if it wasn't getting the kind of rating numbers that they expected and they wanted, so they would just dump the show.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you're right about that. I mean, the only cartoon that I can think of that was able to compete with The Simpsons was maybe like Beavis and Butthead and Batman the Animated Series in the prime time slot.
Yeah, I think you're right. Beavis and Butthead had quite a run, but it was always, you know, kind of a under the radar, sort of cult thing. But of course, it's a great show and really smart and you know, but I don't. Well, of course, King of the Hill, and you know, that was a great show too. It's very well done, well written, and I always enjoyed watching it. But yeah, so it did pretty well. But it wasn't really until Family Guy and those other spinoffs that they really kind of started running along the lines of The Simpsons. But they're all kind of related to The Simpsons. I mean, they have a similar look and a similar attitude. But yeah, but now with Netflix and Amazon and all these other kind of smaller networks coming up, there's a lot of animation being done. There's a lot of new stuff. And BoJack Horseman's one of those. But I think there's going to be some that are going to kind of float to the surface there and have a longer lifespan.
Yeah, you're right about that, because the truth is, in America, before The Simpsons, the only places where adult animation was taken seriously was Japan and Europe.
Yeah.
Yeah, now it seems that adult animation has become dominant, but at the time when Duckman premiered, it was considered like it was more of a niche adult animation.
Yeah, more like an underground thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was always sort of a cult show. I mean, we never had the kind of numbers that, I think the most we did was like a million of viewers, you know, for which sounds like a lot, but really in TV numbers, it's not. But we never had a huge audience. And, you're right. I mean, it's interesting. You look at the cartoons and you're talking about those classic MGM, Warner Brothers things like Tex Avery stuff and all of that. Those were really for adults, you know. They were kind of adult cartoons. They had adult jokes in them. And I remember watching them as a kid, and some of the jokes would just go right over my head. But I liked them, you know, I liked the look of them and everything. And then in the 50s, 60s, you know, in TV animation, they started to do more like kind of kids-oriented cartoons. And somehow the idea came across that, well, cartoons are just for kids. But they didn't really start off that way. And you know, there are several shows that sort of try to break out of that now. But yeah, animation, you're right. I mean, there's anime and manga and stuff. Very much sort of adult things with sexual content and all of that, but that didn't really get going in America. And I think in some ways Duckman is really one of the very few cartoons even now that were, you know, it was done just for adults.
Oh yeah. Well, how is it like working with Cartoon Network? Because, you know, I've heard from people, you know, I've read about, you know, how in the animation industry they kind of treat people like crap.
You heard that, huh? Yeah, well, you know, Cartoon Network was fine. I mean, I had a good relationship with them. And really it comes down to where you're only working with two or three executives that are sort of overseeing your project. And so they were fine with me. But what happened was, and one reason Squirrel Boy sort of fell out was the whole network sort of fell apart, and there was like an internal upheaval, everyone that was there were gone, you know, and then a whole new crew came in, and so any shows that were working on that level that were in production sort of went out with the new regime. Same thing happened to me later after After Squirrel Boy, I was developing a show at Nickelodeon called Larry and Gronk. It was kind of a caveman thing. And same thing happened there. We were clicking along pretty well, and we were doing a pilot, you know, getting ready to do a pilot, and then they had a complete regime change, and everything fell out that was part of the former group, you know. So, yeah, it's like anything else. I mean, you know, it's difficult. It's a difficult business, and you know, you. The most you can hope for really is a network that just sort of lets you do your own thing. And that's what we were lucky with UPN. I mean, it at the same time we were pitching Duckman, Fox offered us a two-script pickup on the show. And, you know, and then UPN offered us, I mean, USA offered us 13 shows on the air. So we thought, oh, well, yeah, it's not Fox, but we'll go for it. And in a way, I'm kind of glad we did, because USA didn't really know what to do with us. So they just kind of left us alone and, you know, just sort of let us work on our own stuff. So we didn't get a lot of interference and a lot of notes from the network. So it was pretty good in that sense. So, I mean, it depends on the network. It depends on the regime that's running the network at that time as to how much friction and pushback you get when you're doing a show.
Yeah, you're right about that, because I don't remember because I wasn't born yet. But, well, actually, I was born, but I was a baby. But, yeah, if you remember, the critic went to Fox during season two.
Yes.
And they just couldn't compete with the ratings juggernaut of The Simpsons.
That's right. And they canceled that show. And after two seasons, they canceled it. And then what happened was they released it on DVD. And all of a sudden, the DVD sales just went through the roof. And they decided to re-up their deal, which is very unusual. I'm not sure I've ever... seen a situation like that with any other show, but yeah, the DVD sales were so big that they said, well, let's take another look at this thing. Yeah, that's really unusual.
Everett Peck, it's been an excellent show. Yeah. Thank you so much for being on, and big fan of your work.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Also, you're welcome. Thanks, Cartrell.
You're welcome.